Now, the story of an object that's touched and transformed your life in ways you might never have considered. In fact, I'm using it right now. Testing, 1, 2, 3, it's the microphone. We, of course, are people of the microphone here at NPR. Recently, we were intrigued by a story we heard about a boutique microphone operation. Two people, a husband and wife, creating microphones at the foot of the Blue Ridge Mountains in southwestern Virginia. We drove 6 hours listening to Ella Fitzgerald, up ridgebacks, through hollers, and passing double-wide trailers and lawns ornamented with lots of lawn art. Finally, we were in Floyd County, Virginia, where, up on Horse Ridge Road, John and Mary Peluso not only create microphones, they also tend to a couple dozen sheep and lambs and two very fetching llamas.
Dolly and Lori.
You gotta have a Dalai Lama.
Mary and John Peluso moved to Floyd County 8 years ago from Chicago. John had worked with mics for years in the city's recording studios. Now, he and Mary rise before dawn to make their own microphones. They're modeled after some of the world's legendary mics, but priced for mere mortals.
And these are the diaphragms.
John Peluso pulls out a microphone diaphragm, an impossibly thin sliver of plastic, sensitive enough to quiver with the vibration of a voice or an instrument. The vibration in the diaphragm begins the process of converting sound waves into electricity.
It's got 300 atoms of gold on it, which is a very small amount of gold. And it says, like a drum head, I can tune it.
With your finger?
Yeah.
Huh.
Like any good instrument, a microphone diaphragm has to be in tune. And for that, John uses a tank of dry nitrogen and his closest ally, his ears.
We're listening for a certain tone.
John has the unique ability to take these bits and pieces of matter, metal, and transform them into an instrument, which is more than just matter. It has a personality, and it is a form of magic.
Certainly, creating microphones, as the Pelusas do, requires both the conjuring of alchemy and the science of sound. Like the crooked road up this ridge, John Peluso's career has taken some twists. Back in the 60s, he was a long-haired techie working at a suburban sound studio. One day, the recording engineer didn't show.
And we had a session with a blues bassist, Blue Blood, who was, at the time, B.B. King's bass player, so the band was B.B. King and his band. And I was the one there. The studio owner was there, and he said, the engineer didn't show up, the clients are here, you're it.
In his career as an engineer, Peluso would eventually work with all the classic microphones. Mics from RCA, Sony, AKG, Neumann. But he knew little of what he calls the black art of making microphones until he went to work for a mysterious Latvian physicist named Werner Ruvolt.
The day I met Werner, they had just had an elevator crash. Werner was at the bottom of the elevator shaft, and I put him in my car and drove him 3 blocks to the local hospital. They bandaged him up, and I drove him back to the studio, and he commenced to give us the 5-cent tour.
Wow. And the rest, as they say, is history.
The rest is history, yeah.
Ruvolt had volumes to impart about the soul of a microphone.
What he would tell me is intricacies of the technology, why it did what it did, why it sounded the way it sounded. You know, we would talk 2-3 hours at night after our work.
Really? For 2 or 3 hours?
For nights, days, and weeks, and months on end.
But there were other things about which Werner Ruvolt was reticent, such as his own part in the lineage of the microphone, a lineage that went from the fabled Neumann microphone factory in Berlin straight to the heart of the Third Reich. The 1936 Berlin Olympics reached the world through the groundbreaking Neumann bottle microphone. Chancellor Adolf Hitler declared the games begun.
Ich verkünde die Spiele von Berlin zur Feier der ersten Olympiade neuer Zeitrechnung als eröffnet.
The Neumann bottle mic, a big canister with a head on it like a golf ball, was designed in 1928 by Jörg Neumann. It was a technological breakthrough. Neumann took the old carbon grain microphone that sounded like a telephone and turned it into a mass-produced condenser microphone. Remember the vibrations of that impossibly thin diaphragm? Here, for the first time, that diaphragm was 1/10 the width of a human hair. So thin, it could respond to the most minute vibration, making the output clearer, closer, more authoritative. The Neumann bottle mic gave the human voice its full range and intimacy.
The Third Reich, Hitler and Goebbels and all these other people used that technology to their advantage.
Klaus Heine is the owner of a company called German Masterworks and an expert in vintage microphones.
They could, for the first time, not only transport the words and the information, but they could transport emotion. And that was revolutionary.
So when Adolf Hitler and Hermann Göring announced measures like the Nuremberg race laws, the message was chillingly clear. And the words could not only be understood, but felt. Marriages between Jews and German citizens are forbidden, Göring says.
Eheschließungen zwischen Juden und Staatsangehörigen Deutschen oder artverwandten Blutes sind verboten.
The Neumann mic was so widely used by the Führer and his party leaders that Klaus Heine says it acquired a nickname. Listen closely.
The Hitlerflasche, the Hitler bottle. And this was truly used and is still being used today unashamedly as the name for this microphone.
So it was already a microphone with a past that Werner Ruvalds came to produce in the thick of World War II in Germany. John Paluso remembers his mentor telling him he'd been kidnapped in Latvia and compelled to work for the Germans. After the war, Ruvalds came to the U.S. quickly. We know little about him, other than the bare facts from the Social Security Death Index. He died at age 66 in 1982 in Cook County, Illinois. But he did pass on his art to John Paluso, who shows us a photo of Werner.
He's in his typical thick horn-rimmed glasses and his sweater vest that he wore year-round and his back to me because he didn't like his photograph taken in front of his Neumann disc cutting lathe.
Why was Werner so camera shy?
I don't know.
You think it had to do with his past?
It might have had to do with his past. You know, this was during the period where Nixon resigned and he was terrified that the government in the United States was going to change and it was all going to go downhill.
But just looking at this picture of this white-haired man with his sweater vest and his back to the camera, it's a mystery picture, really.
Yeah.
There's something about it that he's hiding, really, from us here.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and he did.
After the war, the Neumann factory took some of the exact same technology that had gone into the Hitler bottle microphone and put it into a new microphone that would transform the American studio sound. High fidelity, meet the crooners.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
You're listening to the U-47. The first condenser microphone that, with the flick of a switch, could go from picking up sound from all directions to picking up sound in the shape of a heart. Of course, old Blue Eyes loved it.
Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band and he'll toot his flute for you.
Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong used it.
You say Ida.
And you say either.
You say neither.
And you say neither.
Neither.
Either.
And either.
Another.
Let's call the whole thing off, boys.
Bing Crosby used it. So did Tony Bennett and countless others. And a handful of guys from the other side of the pond use the U-47 and its successor, the U-48.
If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you.
In fact, says John Peluso,
it's hard to find a record recorded in the 50s or 60s that didn't have U-47s on them.
So naturally, the U-47, with its smooth musical tone, is one of the main microphones the Pelusos try to replicate in their shop. Now, the little workshop up on Horse Ridge Road doesn't much look like the pristine German facility where Neumann microphones are made by white-suited workers in hairnets. And the Pelusos' casings and bit parts are manufactured around the world, although to John's custom specifications. But looking up, we see a silver parade of the 13 different kinds of mics he assembles. At each step, they're meticulously tested.
This machine is vibrating that diaphragm at a million times a second.
And tested.
A little feedback. So the microphone is working now. That's the feed from the headphone.
And retested, ending with a run through a time domain spectrometer developed by NASA. And it sounds like it. The result? A microphone like the Peluso 2247LE, begat by the Neumann U-47, begat by the Neumann bottle microphone. But this new mic costs a couple thousand dollars. The U-47 can range up to $15,000. The Peluso's cheapest mic is just a few hundred bucks. So by now, perhaps you'd like to hear the sound of a Peluso microphone. Well, here are the voices of 350 satisfied customers.
Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
That's right, it's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir lofting their voices heavenwards from Salt Lake City and using just 5 Peluso microphones to do it. Our visit with John and Mary Peluso was produced by Kate Davidson. Let's go out on perhaps a less exalted note, but one appropriate to the rolling hills of the Blue Ridge, the music of Blue Highway, largely recorded on Peluso microphones.
Everybody drives the same old roads these days. Don't see a thing, but they know the way. Every mile's a marker. Better place to stop but not to stay. Daddy was a brakeman on the L&N. Sometimes he let me ride along with him. No matter where we'd stop along the way, everybody knew his name.
That's All Things Considered from NPR News. Andrea Seabrook is back next week. I'm Jackie Leiden.